Well, I have here a copy of yesterday's newspaper. It happens to be the Times. Last time I mentioned a newspaper by name to talk about the media in general, I happened to mention The Guardian. I got assaulted afterwards by all The Guardian readers who thought it was totally unfair to criticize. But actually, I could have said the same thing about any other. What I'm about to say about The Times, I could have picked any newspaper off the shelf and it would work. So if you adore The Times newspaper, please, I am not making a point about which newspaper you should or should not buy. Here is yesterday's copy of The Times. So on page 2. Page 2, the leader articles. Article number 1, signs of recovery. A rebound in economic data offers tentative evidence of an upturn. And the government should aim to ease the conditions for investment-led growth. Read on, page 4. Oh dear, fears for the future of the Co-op Bank after a huge rise in levels of bad debts. Then we have a Q&A section. I'm a Co-op Bank customer. Are my savings safe? Yes. Next question. A bit more than that. So can I ignore this story? No. Well, it's not for sale anymore, so tough. If you've got savings in the Co-op, have a read online. Where do we go next? Have a look. Keep going. Here we are. There's an interview here, look, with Lord Young. Apparently he's 81 and he's bristling with energy. Now his colleagues at number 10 call him the dude. There we are. There's a picture of him smiling outside number 10. He was Prime Minister's special advisor. And he's talking about retirement. Contemporaries of mine who were chairmen of very large companies and very active people got to their late 60s or 70s and started pushing the trolley around the supermarket. And you could see them mentally and physically just go downhill. If you don't have work, you start worrying about your health and start noticing aches and pains. My advice is keep going for as long as you can. Lord Young has no intention of slowing down. I'm 81 and I've got another 20 years ahead of me. Will he ever retire? Never. And she herself calls me from upstairs. Apparently BT, this is then the business section, apparently BT's shares rocketed yesterday to their highest level for more than 5 years after the telecoms giant reported better results than expected and increased its dividends. If you want to know where to invest, apparently BT is the place to go. Or maybe that rise has already happened in full and it's too late. Keep going, we get to the money section. Money section for Saturday. It's a long 5 ways you can make a profit from the stock market bull. There we are. So the stock market's on a bull. That means it's charging ahead happily, as opposed to burying its head in the sand like a bear. And you can make money, apparently, during the bull phase of the stock market. Oh, look, on the back, we have an advert for Burberry watches. Apparently, they've got a new watch called the Britain that you might want to buy. There we go. Just thought I'd show you that. What else have we got here? There's a technology section here. Look. Here we are. Here is somebody called Goulding. No relation, as far as I know, of one of our own. I have to ask him later. This is Ellie Goulding, talking about her latest gadget. I use my phone to record, write, and tune my guitar. Now, the question is, can your phone do that? And actually, more to the point, they don't ask you this. If you had a phone that could do that, would you be able to play the guitar well enough for that to be of any use to you at all? I know I couldn't. Inside, here we are. Oh, look, gadgets to make you fit. Look at that. The Nike Plus Fuel Band is supposed to revolutionise the way you live. Wouldn't you like one of those? It's supposed to be going to be fit or not, doesn't it? Brushing my teeth gave me points, says the scare quoted section in the middle there. Oh, there's a section on smart TVs. Well, 55 inches for $2,500, if you want. 55-inch TV for $2,500. Here's a magazine. You always get a magazine on Saturday, don't you? This week, what I'm wearing. Laura Crepe on the new metallic. Apparently metallic coloured fabrics are in this year. So like a metallic car, you get if you're a lady, a dress. So we've got a blue metallic sheen to it. I didn't know that was in, but apparently it is. There's a section on how to wear clothes from the supermarket and not to look like a fashion disaster. So that's the opposite end of the spectrum. And then we've got the 30 best buys from the high street in here as well. Keep flipping through. What else have we got in the magazine for this week? Oh, man. Oh, we've got more watches on the back cover. The weekend section is always tremendous fun, isn't it? This time they go camping, 20 best coastal campsites. mean, these are palatial campsites that you can book in at. So if you go on some of these campsites here, look. You see, look at that teepee. Can you see that picture? That's an amazing teepee tent that is more comfortable than most of our homes are. And yet apparently you're camping. And that is just fabulous. I love that picture on the back. I mean, doesn't that, you know, what a fantastic cruise along the river. Absolutely great. That is yesterday's newspaper, and there's a lot more in the section as well. And as I say, you could have bought another paper, you could have bought one today. Doesn't make a great deal of difference. Our culture is all about enjoying the good things in life, and it's all about holding out before us the things that we don't have so that we wish we had. Showing us how beautiful that beach resort is, how shiny that car is, or that dress. How snazzy that new phone is. Do you remember the queues at the Apple store in London when they launched their first iPhone, kind of round the block a few times just for the whole night before? Take cars. When another car pulls up next to you at the lights or parks next to yours at the station, what do you think? You either think, wow, I'd love to have a car like that. Or you think, mine's better than theirs. Just one example of how we incessantly rank ourselves, look around and compare ourselves to other people in the room. And we either feel proud of what we've got, or we wish what somebody else had. Lots of people in this area commute to London. Every day, nearly 400,000 people work in the square mile. Those people are driven by all kinds of things, but many of them are driven by how much they can earn, what bonus they might get at the end of the year, and how fast their pension can accrue, and how early they might be able to retire. Just the other day, I was told of somebody in this area who has just retired at the age of 35. And before you think, that's not me, I have a humble, low-paid job, and I'm happy with my lot. We need to stop and realise this approach to life infects us more than we realise. Which of us has never wished that we have what other people have got? As one friend of mine likes to put it, the Bible teaches that money doesn't make me happy, but I'm still willing to give it a go, just in case. Did you know that 94% of adults in the UK have played the National Lottery at some point? 70% play regularly. The National Lottery would not exist if most of us did not harbour a dream of waking up to riches we had never known possible. Two foundation stones for the whole advertising industry. Pride in what we have and desire for what we do not have, usually driven by what we see. And the point is that we Christians are not exempt from all of this. We pick up these approaches to life almost in the air we breathe. Which of us has not been around to a friend's house and found yourself wondering which TV they've got because it looks better than yours? Sure, some of us haven't, but honestly, have you never felt, I want that about something? Those of us with children know that they want their Christmas presents in June because they see what's coming up and they think, I want that, and it needs to be now, not wait till Christmas. The problem with this is not that the material goods we all enjoy are bad. Everything God made is good and is to be received with thanksgiving, but there is a problem with it. And that short Bible reading that John read for us spells out the two reasons why this approach to life is a big problem for the Christian. The first problem is that this approach to life doesn't love God. It doesn't love God. Have a look at verse 15. Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. When John uses the word world, he doesn't mean planet Earth. It's the same as in John's Gospel. The world is human society whenever we organise ourselves to resist God and his purposes and to live our own way. We're not to love that kind of world. And we're not to love the things that are in it either. And in verse 16, he spells out what those things are. They're exactly what we've just been talking about. The desires of the flesh. The desires of the eyes, and pride in possessions. We're not to love that approach to life. Why not? If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. Insofar as you love that approach to life, you don't love God. That's a bit stark. But he spells out why this is so in verse 16. For all that is in the world is not from the Father, but is from the world. That's an approach to life that you didn't learn from God. You learnt it from the world. You're copying those who reject God, who don't want to live his way, and so you're copying a lifestyle that is the opposite of loving God. That's the problem with this approach to life. It doesn't love God. Sometimes two people get married where one of them has much more money than the other, and the cynics start to gossip that the poorer person is only marrying for the money. They don't love their future husband or wife. They love their money. This is one step worse still. The approach to life that John is talking about is like the man who marries a wealthy wife, not so that he can live in her mansion, but so that he can enjoy the views over the property next door and wish he could live there instead. This approach to life, boasting in what we've got, longing for the things we can see we don't have, it doesn't love God. So next time you find yourself, mobile contract nearly at an end, dreaming what might come next, what do? You recognize that the way of life you've subtly bought into is the symptom, not the problem. What it's exposing is that you don't really love God. There are other things you love more. And so the answer is not to beat yourself up for getting drawn into the cycle of wanting the newest, fastest, and shiniest thing. The answer is to feed your love for God. You need to allow God's greatness to grip you in new ways so that you start to see that he is worth your love. You need to appreciate the love that God has for you in fresh ways so that you see that he is the one person who is worth living your life for. The latest, shiniest toys cannot love you back. And as we'll think in a minute, they cannot satisfy you either. But God is the one who is worthy of our love and worship, and who has already loved us in the most unimaginable ways. He even gave his own son to die for you, so that you and he can be friends once again. There are lots of ways you can feed your love for God. Coming to church regularly can help. Reading the Bible for yourself with some resources to help you makes a big difference. I'd highly recommend joining a midweek Bible study group or doing Christianity Explored if you've never done it. There's the first problem with the world's approach to life. It doesn't love God. There's a second problem. It doesn't last. It doesn't last. This is verse 17. The world is passing away along with its desires, but whoever does the will of God abides forever. The world is passing away, and so are its desires. And that's because Jesus has come. Glance back up to verse 8. The darkness is passing away, and the true light is already shining. Jesus, the light, has come into the world. There are still many dark pockets in the world where people don't want to know Jesus, but the true light is already shining, and so the darkness is on the way out. Which means that the world has already begun to disappear. People still club together to resist God's way for life, but not for long. And the world's desires have begun to disappear. People still live for the stuff they own, and they still make it their ambition to own more and newer and better, but living for that is on the way out. And one day Jesus will come back to this earth, and all those who have loved him can look forward to that day. Because that will be the beginning of life with him on the earth. Living life to the full. Living life in harmony with God rather than fighting him. Living for the things that really matter, rather than just trying to accumulate stuff. What John is saying is really very simple, but it's so easy to forget. There is no future in worldliness. It's a dated system. It will collapse. We all know about things dating, don't we? In the modern world, technology moves so fast that things look dated really quickly. If you watch a film from 10 years ago, so many cues on the screen betray its age. Things have moved on. Perhaps you've even had the experience of setting your heart on the latest smartphone. So you save up for it, and finally you buy it, only to find out that it's just become yesterday's model. It's on the way out, and anyone who's anyone has this new one instead. And we can relate to that precisely because our hearts are so wedded to trying to keep up with the latest this, that, or the other. Which means we all know a bit of that wish not to be left behind, not to be out of date. What John is saying is, forget the latest phone, car, or tablet. This whole approach to life that is driven by what we have or want to have, it's so yesterday. It's not where the future lies. Don't be so out of date as to live for the stuff you have or want to have. It doesn't last. But John says that something does. Whoever does the will of God abides forever. If we live always hankering after things that are newer or bigger, better or faster, we'll never be satisfied. Because there's always something newer still, bigger still, better still, or faster still. If we live this way, satisfaction will always elude us. But John says that lasting joy is available. And it's found in doing God's will, in loving him, and in letting that shape your life. So if, like me, you need help from time to time in weaning your affections off a craving for the latest upgrade, remind yourself that it won't last. Not the upgrade you hanker for, but the whole approach to life. Tap into that fear of ending up with an outdated model, and don't settle for an outdated life. Don't chase after a way of life that is fast disappearing. It doesn't love God. It doesn't last. It's time we lived our lives for something that lasts, something that matters, something that is really worth living for. If you're here today as someone who is still looking into the claims of Jesus, can I encourage you to keep looking? Jesus never taught that money or possessions are bad, but he did teach that loving those things can keep us away from loving the God who made us. And he invites you to follow him through life, to get a life. To get a life that has substance. But I guess most of us here are already following Jesus. Jesus calls us to be in the world, but not of the world. The world lives for what we own and what we want, and all too easily, so do we. Let's live the alternative, enjoying all that we have, but living to love God, living a life that lasts. Let's pray.